First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to come and talk and present this, the latest work with Ricardo Schiappa and Marcel Vonk. This talk follows directly from the talk of Marcel, where I will still mention Panleve and I will go to matrix models. Again, the goal is the same, is to understand the physics and mathematics that is encoded in the resurgence trans series. The outline of my talk is going to be a brief motivation, and then I will take two approaches. Marcel has shown you a lot about Panleve 1 and how to construct local solutions, in local meaning sectorial solutions in Stokes wedges in Panleve 1. And I'm going to try to go from local to global in two ways. I will take Panleve 1 and try to construct global solutions by gluing sectorial solutions in Panleve 1. And for that, I will need what I will explain Stokes transitions, and the phenomenon of resonance will be quite important. Also, I will take another approach, which is going off criticality beyond Panleve 1, and I will deal with the quartic matrix model, but for this I will need to do every single step that Marcel has already mentioned for Panleve 1. So I will build the phase diagram, analyze the sectorial solutions of the matrix model, then do the analytic trans-series summation, do different summation procedures and the analytic trans-series summation to see evidence for the phase diagram, and retrieve analytic data like the Li-Yang zeros in the partition function. And then I'll finish with some conclusions. So first, matrix models. Matrix models are actually a very good simpler models in where we can actually analyze the non-perturbative description of string theory. So in particular, string theory in simpler backgrounds like the Dijkgraaf-Waffe type topological strings. There are also simpler models to study the non-perturbative structure behind the large end-hoofed expansions. And of course, these two things are not independent. We know that there's large end dualities relating the two. And again, matrix models allows us to understand the large end dualities and the structure of the large end dualities in simpler cases. If we do a double scaling limit of the matrix model, large N and small coupling GS in particular way, we retrieve the 2D quantum gravity, which is, Marcel has already mentioned, it is a simpler model that we can study. It obeys the Panleve 1 equation. But so the free energies, the second derivative of the free energies obey the Panleve equation. But one thing that to mention is that it already sees a lot of the structure that we see in string theory, in particular the genus expansion, the topological genus expansion. So we have asymptotic series with 2G factorial growth. We will have the instanton corrections, the Debye contributions. So it's actually a very rich model to start with before going to the matrix models. What have we seen so far? So what Marcel has mentioned was that we could use trans series as a most general formal solution of the Panleve 1 equation. He analyzed sectorial solutions, which are valid within Stokes wedges. And of course, different Stokes wedges will have different asymptotic behavior in the solutions. The boundary data actually fully determines which solution you're analyzing. And what he used was to show you how to use analytic trans-series summation to obtain to obtain analytic data, in particular the zeros of the partition function or the poles of the solution of Panleve. Our present goal is to actually answer two questions: how to construct a global solution from what Marcel has presented, and also, how to generalize these results beyond Panleve 1. And when I mean generalize, I mean very specifically to go off criticality and into the realm of matrix models. So let's start with the Panleve. I'll continue my review. You've just seen this. So we use a two-parameter trans series. We have two instanton actions in the trans series, which are plus or minus each other. This is actually already evidence of resonance. Resonance in this case, what I mean is that if you see there's, depending on NNM, there's many sectors, asymptotic sectors, phi NM, which will have the same exponential grading because the actions are opposite to each other. X is just the open string coupling. The sigmas are the boundary data that defines for you the sectorial solutions. These sectors are asymptotic, and in particular, if you look at the diagonal sectors, which are the NN, they have a topological genus expansion in GS squared, while when N is different from M, we have just a kind of an open string coupling expansion in GS. This is, again, the fact that there is a topological genus expansion, G squared, for the diagonal sectors. This is, again, evidence of resonance. The LNMs, as Marcel explained, this is logarithmic sectors, but they are not independent. They can be summed away, and they will not be present in my talk, for the rest of my talk, because this, we can always include them at any point. Well, we can always sum them away and include them in the phis. So another point is that, so this was the table that Marcel shown you, that in the Polyvay-1 equations, you had, from the transitions point of view, you had a set of discrete solutions, which were the tritronqué, which corresponds to having the zero parameters turned on. If you have one parameter family of solutions, which were the tronqué solutions, and then to get the full most general solution, you need a two-parameter, the full two-parameter family of solutions. The boundary data specifically defines which solution you're looking at, and the analytic transitive summation gave you the analytic data. So now, again, as I mentioned before, we are looking how to glue the different sectors to get the global solutions, and I will now explain how to do that with Stokes transitions. But the first thing to do is actually to rewrite my trans series in a slightly different way, in a more proper way, which is by using vectorial notation. So in here, I define my instanton vector. I define the boundary data as also a vector, and my sectors are now labeled by a vector that lives in a two-dimensional half lattice. So that I've mentioned before, already twice, the specific boundary data defines a very specific sectorial solution valid on a Stokes wedge. And different sigmas will lead to different solutions with different asymptotics. The global solution will be basically, will have different asymptotics in different Stokes wedges. And what the Stokes phenomenon actually does is basically when it occurs at Stux line, and it translates to basically changing the sigmas in order to get these different asymptotics. What I mean by changing the sigmas is, imagine that you, in a particular Stokes wedge, define some specific values for the sigmas. What the Stokes phenomena does, and specifically, this is the Stokes transitions, they propagate this knowledge of the boundary data in one wedge into all the other wedges. It does mean a jump in the sigmas, but given your initial sigmas. So these Stokes transitions, they're the ones that propagate the boundary data, and they depend generically on an infinite set of Stokes data. So let me be more specific. In Polyvay-1, we have two Stokes lines. They're the positive real axis and the negative real axis of argument of x, 0, and pi. And this is related to the fact that we have a positive real action and a negative real action. How does in particular, let's look at just the positive real line, and let's look at what the Stokes transition looks like when we cross the positive real line. And for simplicity, take one of the parameters to zero, sigma 2 to 0. In fact, if you do this with sigma 2 to 0, the transition is very, very simple. Sigma 1 jumps from its initial value just before the real line to that same value plus S1, where S1 is the very well-known Stokes constant of Polyvay-1. So it's as simple as this, the Stokes transition. But if you have sigma 1 and sigma 2 non-zero, then the Stokes transitions are functions that can be complicated functions of sigma 1 and sigma 2. And they depend on not just on the original data, sigma 1 and sigma 2, but also in a collection of problem-specific numbers. And this is what I call the Stokes data. In particular, S1 is one of these numbers. So the Stokes transitions for the full two-parameter solution are completely determined by this Stokes data. Just a little bit more about this, because if we want to do the Stokes transitions, we need to be able to define them completely. So we need to understand the structure of the Stokes data. And so in particular, we know that this is a resurgent transseries. There's resurgence relations between the sectors, the phi n's, and these resurgence relations translate directly into contributions, specific contributions to the Stokes transitions. In particular, so this I've said that these contributions are detected by Stokes data. One thing that I haven't mentioned is that the same way as I've rewritten the trans series, the Stokes data organizes itself also into vectors. And how does this work? Imagine that what's the contribution between, so the resurgence relations between a sector phi n and a sector phi n plus l will give some contribution proportional to this Stokes vector, which only depends on the discrete distance between the two sectors. It doesn't depend on the sectors themselves, but on the distance between the two of them. So the Stokes data is fundamental to each problem. It's problem specific, but very often, apart from the one constant, very often you can only access it numerically. And the further away the two sectors are, the more difficult it is to get numerically the Stokes data. But in case of Pahlevi 1, they're actually not all independent. And we can find a lot of structure, and this is due to resonance. In order to explain what resonance is, so I told you that these relations lead to contributions in the Stokes transitions. Let me choose a general sector, phi 3-2, and show you what type of contributions do I expect for the Stokes transitions coming from this sector. These are the blue lines, are all the fundamental contributions. And of course, then I can have iterations of these directions to other sectors. So these are the fundamental, I can have iterations, but not all iterations are allowed. So it's not that you can reach any sector from one particular sector. And you can state in a different way that if you try to reach two different sectors, some of these Stokes vectors might be zero. But you can know exactly which iterations are allowed from resurgence. So now we go to resonance. And the way to go to resonance is to actually define the singularities in the Borel plane. So in the Borel plane, the singularities in the Stokes irrations, in this case, zero, pi and zero, are given by the projection by the Stokes, by the instanton vector, by the A. So basically, what I'm saying is that the contributions to the Stokes transitions will collapse either in theta equals zero or theta equals pi, depending on this projection, depending on the singularities that I go into the Borel plane. So this is my projection. And so this is the lattice. This is actually the perturbative series. And this is the lattice that of the SLs. And these are the singularities in the Borel plane, which will correspond to different contributions to the Stokes transitions. When we have generally an instanton vector, which is A1 and A2, where they're not related, what happens is that each lattice point will fall on a unique singularity in the Borel plane. But if we have resonance, in fact, different lattice points can fall into the same singularity. Here, you can't see this because the perturbative sector has very simple contributions from the lattice, only these two lines. But if we go to the previous example of the phi 3-2 sector, you can see this. So this is the phi 3-2 sector non-resonant. What happens is that you have the projection will give you, you know, lots, several singularities, but they're very close together, but they're all different. And they will either be at the pi direction or the zero direction. But if you have resonance, it's like they line up together. And what happens is that several singularities, several lattice points, will fall exactly on the same singularity. This is the effect of resonance, in fact. And the fact that you have this effect of resonance actually will result in many geometric relations constraining the Stokes data for the Pahlevi equation. And we still have, naturally, a residual set of independent numbers that we still need to calculate. So just to show you a bit further, the Stokes vectors of so this is the lattice of Stokes vectors. So this is the ones, the 0, 1 vector. This is the 1, 0 vector. So this is the 0, minus 1 vector of DSLs. So this are numbers that we can actually calculate. And these N0, N1, N2, N3, N4, et cetera, are the residual Stokes data that I need to start from. In particular, here, I didn't write the values just because they're a bit more complicated, a bit longer. So I give you just one example how this Stokes vector actually depends on the results. So these are the unconstrained data. Resonance, I will explain what the colors mean in a moment. Resonance gives you relations that actually follow in these directions. Basically, relations constraining the data. Once you actually have the relations, you can actually easily see a pattern going in the vertical directions. And you can use that pattern to conjecture the higher ones, the higher Stokes vectors. And this is what these boxes mean, that it's a conjectured formula from the pattern that you can see. Can we go from the lower diagonal to the upper diagonal? Yes. Basically, there's a conjugation and a shift that you can easily calculate as well. And this actually gives you all the information about the Stokes data, as long as you have the starting data and case. These are the numbers, just so that you see. We have populated the thing. So the dots just means, because I said that it's a conjugation and a shift, and that's the shift. It's just too long to put there, but we know the exact values. Of course, most of these constants, we know them numerically. It's the next step is to actually know the exact Stokes constants. next step. Meaning anyone that can look at the numbers and guess, it'll be perfect. But so in principle, with the starting data, you have all the information to construct the Stokes constants. It's a much smaller residual set of data that we need to calculate. And the resonance will give us all the rest of the information about the structure. And with this, we can definitely construct, do all the Stokes transitions that we need to get, in particular, the zeros in the regions that Marcel mentioned that we need the Stokes transitions to get to. Now I would like to take the next step, which is to go off criticality, so go beyond Palévé and into the quartic matrix model. So what I will want to do is to analyze the large N asymptotics of observables in the matrix model using trans-series, resurgence, and then analytic summation, analytic trans-series summation. What we start from is the local formal trans-series solutions for the large N free energies, and we're talking about the quartic matrix model, and we will determine this perturbative series, the asymptotic expansions. We can do it in two regions, basically the one cut dominant region or the two cut dominant region. We'll go for the one cut. Meaning this was already done by Marcus in 2008, and we've for one parameter, and we've done the full two parameter case in 2011, and also Ricardo Schiappa, Ricardo Vaz did in 2013 for the two cut. So in 2015, Ricardo Schiappa and collaborators actually used the methods of Borel, Padé, Cal to obtain from the trans series the one parameter. They took only one parameter. They obtained finite n results. So you have a large n expansion for the matrix model, and you can go to any finite n. More specifically, you can actually go to any arbitrary complex n. And this relates to my next statement, which is we don't want to go to finite n. We actually want to understand the large n physics behind this, the phase diagram of the matrix model. And we want to use this to understand large n dualities. In particular, what can we learn from the string theory dual? And my mentioning of here that you can get to complex n, this means that in principle, we could get to the string theory dual for complex values of the moduli as well. So you don't need to stick to the real n. You can go to any value of n. So then we're going to analyze the large n structure. We're going to construct a phase diagram, analyze the solutions, the local solutions, and then recover analytic data. And eventually, we want to also be able, this is work in progress, to connect the different sectorial solutions with Stokes transitions, as I mentioned now for Poincaré. So just a quick setup. The quartic matrix model partition function is written here. We are looking at the saddle point analysis around the one-cut solution. The free energies have a perturbative genus expansion. This is the Tuff modulus. And they obey a non-perturbative finite difference equation, which is the string equation. They have resurgent properties. It's a two-parameter transseries, which it's a direct generalization from Poincaré 1. But now the coefficients of the transseries and the instanton auction, as we're going to see, are functions. They're not numbers anymore. And, of course, in the double scaling limit, we can recover the results of Poincaré. So how do we actually solve the matrix model? We use the method of orthogonal polynomials with some normalization Hn. So we define the Rn's as this fraction, and they obey a finite n relation. So we are going to use this to solve for these Rn's numerically, so that's why I'm defining them here. So the recursion relations for the orthogonal polynomials lead to the string equation for the Rn's. This is a continuous version, the capital R's. And you can actually use a trans-series ansatz to solve this equation and get a trans-series ansatz for the R's. And the comparison to Poincaré is direct between the R and the solution of Poincaré in the partition functions are also related. So R has a resurgent properties, has a two-parameter trans-series solution, also has a starting point, the T to the B10M, which was so important to distinguish between the linear analytic transseries summation and the quadratic analytic transseries summation of Marcel in Poincaré, and here it will do the exact same the exact same thing. The instanton actions now and the coefficients are all functions of the Tuff modulus. And now what we want to do is to analyze the large phase diagram, which is basically means to study the leading contributions to these exponentials given by A of T over T. So we calculate the Stokes lines and the anti-Stokes lines. The Stokes lines are where instanton contributions are maximally suppressed, and the anti-Stokes lines is where all contributions are of the same order. So this was actually first studied by Bertola in 2007. But he studied the phase diagram, but he did not study the actual phases or physics within the phases on the phase diagram, and this is what I'm going to show you. So, okay, the colors did not show. This is red, this is green, these areas, and these two are blue, where the one and the two are. Unfortunately, it did not show. So this blue one regions are Stokes regions, where we have a normal Tuff large N expansion. The green regions are the anti-Stokes regions, so they're dominated by three-cut solutions. In principle, they have modular properties. There's no genus expansion. The expansion would be oscillatory. So Bonnet, David, and Hart have studied this region and have found the partition function to be a theta function. Their methods don't allow them to actually fully explore the full phase diagram as we'll do. So the actual Stokes lines are the real lines within these regions, and these two points, which actually showed in blue, are the double scaling limits that will lead to Poincaré 1 and to Poincaré 2. So the question now is, we find the phase diagram. Are really different phases? What local solutions are associated to which phase, and how to obtain analytic data? So this is actually a plot of the positions of the zeros of the orthogonal polynomials, where we keep the argument of the Tuff modulus fixed. And basically, changing time is here changing t. The modulus of t is changing time. Here is the two-cut symmetric region, Stokes. Suddenly, you jump into the anti-Stokes region, and you can see the eigenvalues moving to forming a third cut. And meaning now it's getting more and more populated, so the eigenvalues are just moving around into the third cut. And so I'm following this line, basically. And when it reaches here, to the red region, we'll find that it's a trivalent phase where basically it's a tree-like configuration. I'm sorry, the video takes a moment, but now it's the trivalent phase, and you can see that the cuts join all together, and its the eigenvalues will move around to form a tree-like configuration instead of having three separate cuts. So the organization of eigenvalues is markedly different, but the question still remains, are there really physical different phases associated to these? And sorry, I'm going to stop. The video does take a moment so that I can continue. So in terms of the trend series point of view, what do we have? So this was the case of Polévé. The zero parameter trend series corresponds to solutions that are in either the one cut or the two cut Stokes regions. The one parameter family of solutions corresponds to all the solutions that are defined by three cuts in the anti-Stokes region. And to get actually the trivalent tree-like solutions, the eigenvalue distributions that we just saw, we would need the full two-parameter general solution. So this is how the rest of the table works. So now I would like to go through some numerical evidence of the phases. So now we calculate the small Rns just via the recursion relation. And basically, we set the boundary conditions corresponding to the one-cut configuration. So we take a particular number for n. We keep the argument of t fixed, and we change the modulus of the two modules. I forgot to say that, yeah, all the phase diagrams are in t. Basically, what I'm plotting is t, is the two modulus. Sorry, I did forget that. So here, you can see that in the Stokes region, you have a well-behaved function. Well, not well-behaved function. You have so R is just a normalization factor to make the plots look nice. So here you have a constant, almost constant. It's not constant. If you zoomed in, it's not constant. But at this level, it looks constant. But very linear behavior. And then when you get to the anti-Stokes region, you see that there's oscillation starting for the RNs. This is just numerically solving the RNs. But we can do the same thing from the trend series. We take the one parameter trend series, we choose sigma 1 properly, meaning sigma 1 here is not general. We are talking about a sectorial solution, so we're choosing a specific sigma 1. And what we plot here is just doing an optimal truncation, nothing more, of the perturbative series in the trend series. And you can see that it's very close to the actual solution, the numerical solution in the Stokes region. And once you stop being in the Stokes region, it does not follow at all. So basically the summation of the perturbative expansion leads to very good results in the Stokes region, but as soon as we reach the anti-Stokes boundary, it stops giving results. The question is, what if we add instantons the same way as we would usually do in the Borel Ekal summation? So this is by adding one instanton. And what you find is that, meaning, of course, in the Stokes region, it's the same. And then it actually manages to follow part of an oscillation in the anti-Stokes region, and here in the phase as well. But it's still very close to the boundary, to the anti-Stokes boundary. So what if we add three instantons? Does it improve? Well, you know, we can get an extra dot in the anti-Stokes region, and that's it. And we don't really get any improvement for the phase. Why does this happen? Because in the anti-Stokes region, all of the instanton contributions are of the same order. So you're adding one and one and one when all of them, an infinite number of them, are of the same order. So of course you're not going to get really good approximations in the anti-Stokes region. But one thing that we've already been able to see is that definitely there's different phases in the Stokes region and the anti-Stokes region. There's different physics between them. But can we actually predict the results on the anti-Stokes region? Well, we know how to do better. It's the analytic transseries summation. First, what I show you is the linear analytic transseries summation, which is done for the RNs. Basically, I'm summing the leading terms in GF, the linear, for every instanton sector. And I'm taking sigma 2 to 0. And you can see that now I can not only get, I can get the full first oscillation with the linear analytic transitivity solution, summation. And for the phase, I can get it slightly better, but not much. So the phase is still not well predicted. Okay, can I go to subleading linear analytic transitivity summation? I can get now the first oscillation plus half of the second one. And the phase, again, is not improving. So it is improving. It definitely improved a lot from just doing the instanton sums before, but it's very slow. So again, the next question is, optimal truncation definitely did not allow us to get far into the T6 region. Linear analytic transitivity summation allowed us to go a bit further in, but can we do better? Yes, if we do for the partition function now, and we try to analyze the results from the point of view of partition function and with quadratic analytic transitivity summation, what we obtain, just the leading terms in GS, we obtain all of the oscillations in the anti-Stokes region, and the phase, highly non-trivial, is also followed, meaning around here you start getting, you would need corrections in 1 over GS, naturally. In 1 of GS, no, in GS, sorry. You need corrections, GS corrections, but you can go well into the anti-Stokes region. So you can predict results in the anti-Stokes region. Moreover, can we actually get analytic data, in particular the Young zeros? And so if we do the quadratic analytic transitivity summation for the partition function, so this plot here is actually a direct numerical calculation of the quartic matrix model, n equals 100, 2 months in the CERN cluster. And basically, this is a density plot of the zeros of the partition function. Of course, the darker is the highest number of zeros, lighter, less number of zeros, into the anti-Stokes region. And this is a one-hour computation of quadratic analytic transitivity summation, leading GS, just a few terms, in a laptop. And you can see that the quadratic analytic transitivity summation is definitely predicting the position of the Li Yang zeros in a region where all the instantons are all of the same order. So doing this in the doing summations in the anti-Stokes regions where everything is exponential suppressed, easy. Also not almost as easy. Well, as long as we know how to correctly perform the summation, we can obtain all the results, and you can see that the results are going far into the anti-Stokes region. To get the trivalent, well, we did everything we've done is for one parameter. We still need to turn on the second parameter in order to actually obtain trivalent results. But it should be just an extension of this. So just as a summary, so I've spoken about global solutions of Polyvy 1, how to glue sectorial solutions. I've shown you how resonance gives you all these geometric relations, and with that we can actually predict every Stokes vector that we need for the Stokes transitions. For the quartic matrix model, we did study the different asymptotics across the complex Hund plane. The summation of local solutions, we've shown how optimal truncation does not work. Linear improves, and quadratic really gives you the full analytic properties in the anti-Stokes region. And we did predict the Young zeros in that region. Current work. Well, we still need to completely understand the full geometric structure of Stokes data. We still need to understand how to properly determine the residual coefficients. In particular, we would love to calculate the residual Stokes data analytically. And also, we would like to understand the modular properties of the analytic transitivity summation, in particular, from all of this information. So in the matrix model, we are working on doing the Stokes transitions. So everything I've mentioned is local, it's meaning it's sectorial. I would like to use the Stokes transitions to build a global solution and also to get to the trivalent phase by using the full two-parameter transseries solutions. Just one last thing is that our analysis in this only used the weak coupling expansions. We did not do anything else. We started with only weak coupling, and then we performed analytic transseries summation, and we could recover results everywhere in the two complex plane. So it's and for arbitrarily large coupling. So you only started with the weak coupling. You can actually recover all the results. And this method is generic. You don't need to really be specific to matrix models or Poincaré. So in principle, it could be applied to more complex systems, and in particular, to make a connection to the previous talks of Alba and Markus for the holomorphic anomaly equation. The transseries for topological strings in some backgrounds is known. And it can be definitely be matched to the non-perturbative definitions of a string theory that they've mentioned. And thank you.
Thank you very much for the very nice talk, Inés. Comments?
So can you explain the relationship between your approximations, which are very impressive, and the old result of Bonnet, Einar, and David? So these theta functions that they have as an approximation for the partition function of the quartic matrix model, is it in which region is it valid?
It's in the anti-Stokes region, what they've done. So let me show you the... Well, it's basically... It's this region, well, which should have been green. Sorry? Yes, but the difference is that to just go to the trivalent, for example, you just need to turn on the second parameter, while their methods don't allow for a second parameter. So they will not be able to actually get the full phase diagram and are only can only get results from the anti-Stokes region. Of course, we still, meaning the work in progress is to make sure, so they haven't done numerical tests of the young zeros and anything, so to map the two approaches is still...
More complete, but in a sense, they also have a one-over n expansion. The result is a one-over n expansion, essentially.
Yes.
They don't do any more approximation, but what is the precise relationship between what you found and what they wrote as a theta function?
I would say it's some reorganization of the trans-series, which, again, we don't yet have the precise results. I think that you need to do to understand better the analytic trans-series summation for the anti-Stokes region, meaning all of most of the work that I've shown here is a numerical checks that what we're doing is correct. But the mapping, the true mapping, and understanding how our results, which... So we have this G2, like Poincaré, in the analytic transseries summation, which is not, it doesn't show like a complete theta function, but meaning there's several ways of rewriting the transseries, and one of them, even though it's equivalent, can lead to the results.
Yes, you used the orthogonal polynomials method to obtain the recurrence relations to obtain the transseries for the quartic potential. But there are cases when you cannot use these orthogonal polynomials, and but you know the classical solution of the matrix model. Is it possible to reconstruct,
I would say,
ambiguously the transseries from the classical solution, or you need extra data for that?
So you can construct you can definitely construct most of the transseries. The problem is if you only have the classical, the perturbative series, let's put it this way, and not all of the full transseries. So one thing that here the Stokes data plays an important role. So you will know everything up to Stokes data. If I have, with these results, I can actually calculate numerically the Stokes data. If you start from the perturbative series, you can still define everything, but you won't have the full trans-series solution in the sense that, everything will be multiplied by some part of some Stokes number.
Yes. I meant if there are some self-consistency conditions to determine the Stokes data. So to have a Borel sum about.
No. To calculate the Stokes data, so if you do have information from dualities or other things, you definitely can definitely constrain the Stokes data. I would say that if you just had your perturbative series, just that information. It's the same thing. So to calculate, so if you don't have the instanton corrections, the one loop, or actually the leading instanton correction, you wouldn't be able to really constrain the Stokes data.
But if you know the spectral curve, you can reconstruct the leading.
Yeah, no. If you know the spectral curve, but if you know the spectral curve, you can calculate also the meaning. Okay, you're saying, so when you say you have the classical solution, you can actually construct also, meaning instanton data. So then you can construct everything. Yes, sorry.
Thanks. Yes.
What is the order of the phase transition when I consider condensation of instantons? Sometimes it's believed that it's third order phase transition. Is it third order one here as well?
So if you plot the free energies, they go smoothly across, so it's a second order phase transition.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
That's an observation at certain values of n?
It's you calculate, meaning you can determine all the free energies and you can just plot them across the Stokes line. You can calculate them numerically. And you don't see any kind of, you see a very smooth transition.
No more comments? Okay, so let's thank Inês again. There's a lunch break, and as usual, we reconvene at 2:00.